Hi, everyone. I don't know if you can remember times when you thought you had done everything that was expected or needed and were suddenly confronted with the reality that it was not working. It's not going according to plan. One of the biggest examples I remember from my time in IT was when our customer, a major company in the UK, had asked us to do something that had never been done before, something that raised some really difficult technical challenges. We looked at it and said, you can't do that. But something that, if we could work out how to do it, it'd be a big win for our company and be useful all around the world. I was responsible for working out how to do it. So we assembled a team of experts from a lot of different teams around the world and spent a week in a room working out how to do this, coming up with a solution. And we thought we had something really good. We worked out how we were going to present it to our customer and arranged a meeting with a lot of their senior people to explain it to them. And I was responsible for presenting our approach and showing how it would address their requirements. I'd only just started and started to explain it when one of their key people, a friend of mine, stopped me, stood up and told us that we had clearly misunderstood what they were looking for and our solution was never going to do what was needed. It was not a great moment. It's also happened in church life. In the first church I was leading, we found out that the way we were making decisions about church life was totally inaccessible to a number of families from India. In India, they had been used to a totally different way of doing things, and we hadn't taken the time to discuss those differences with them and to see how we could move forward together with something that worked for everyone. And then in another church, we were suddenly confronted by some people who were totally deaf or profoundly hard of hearing and told that some of the songs we were singing, some of the words we were using were offensive to them and stopping them properly engaging in worship. And we see an early example of this sort of thing happening in the story we are looking at today. On the face of it, it's a fairly straightforward account of an administrative glitch in the life of the early church that, when identified, was recognised as important, addressed publicly, and fixed. End of story. Time to move on. But before we do that, I think it's worth looking at it a bit more closely to explore some deeper questions. What was the problem? And how had it occurred? How was it addressed? How would those who have been missing out have felt? What can we learn? We saw earlier in Acts that this first Christian community was one with a deep care for its people. Chapter 2, verse 45 tells us that they gave to everyone who was in need. 4:32 says that they shared everything they had. 4:34 says there were no needy people among them. A great story of generosity and care and compassion and love, one that would have been seen and recognised by the people around. And one group that would have benefited from this generous sharing was widows. In that culture, without a husband to provide for them, they would have been dependent on others and they would have needed support. And this was something that the church was addressing. But a particular group of widows was missing out. Those who are described as being part of the Hellenistic community. So we're suddenly introduced to the idea of two different groups in the church, the Hebraic Jews and the Hellenistic Jews. At its most basic, this was about language. The first group spoke Hebrew, while the second group primarily spoke Greek. But it probably also extended to how people lived and the sort of lifestyle they adhered to. And many Hebrew-speaking Jews would have looked down on their Greek-speaking counterparts, observed their non-Jewish behaviour, and been critical of them. Did any of this creep into the life of the early church? We know from later in the book of Acts that the introduction of non-Jewish people, referred to as Gentiles, into the church raised many questions. We might be seeing the first example of that, the first hint of that here. Or was it simply that there was a process put in place by the Hebrew-speaking majority which just didn't take into account the Greek-speaking community? Maybe they lived in different parts of the town. Maybe they were free at different times. Maybe they were not included in communication about it. We don't know. But something must have caused this particular group to be excluded. Was it deliberate choice? Lack of awareness? People not being seen as fully part of the community? Or something else? Discrimination, either conscious or unconscious, was taking place due to people speaking different languages, living in different ways, or excluded for other reasons. And it seems as though the widows themselves did not seem able to complain about this, so representatives of their community did so on their behalf. And they seem to be hoping that those in control of the situation, the Hebraic Jews, would take notice and do something about it. And that in itself suggests that at that moment there were cliques within the church. Some are part of the in-crowd, while others were not. Some could make things happen, while others couldn't. Now, once the problem was identified, it was recognised as something that was wrong. It needed to be changed with immediate steps put in place to address it. And that's very positive. And I think it reasonable that the apostles, those first close followers of Jesus, recognised that their particular calling was to prayer and preaching and teaching, and that it was right for the resolution of the problem to be delegated to others. But the choice of the others is interesting. They were people, in their context men, who were full of the Spirit and wisdom. People who had been given divine insight and abilities that would help them in their task. People who were chosen and approved of by the whole church. And that's all very good. But from the fact that all had Greek-sounding names, it's very likely that they were all part of the Hellenistic group. And this could have been exactly the right thing to do. In his commentary on Acts, Craig Keener says this. This time, instead of 12 Hebrews, the food distribution program is assigned to 7 Hellenists. Because they belong to the offended minority, they have special sensitivity to both the minority's needs and perceptions. And they are less vulnerable to criticism than Hebrews would have been. Because they are genuinely people of the Spirit, they can be trusted not to treat Hebrews or others unjustly. Wise words from Craig Keener. I do understand it, and it makes a lot of sense, but it also raises some questions. Were these 7 to be responsible for food distribution to just the Hellenistic group in the church, or to everyone? And different people who've looked at it have different views on that. Why should it be the responsibility of the offended minority to fix the problem? Would it not have been better for the existing process to be extended, maybe including some of these Hellenistic believers, to result in a more integrated approach? Why is there no hint of an apology for this group of widows being ignored in the first place? Maybe it was there and Luke doesn't include it in his very short account. But maybe it was just seen as a problem that needed to be fixed, with no real reference to those who'd been left out. I've asked a lot of questions to which the text does not provide an answer. We may have different views on the answers to those questions, or even the validity of the questions at all, and that's okay. But the text does make clear that there was a positive outcome. Verse 7 tells us this. So the word of God spread. The number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith. The apostles were free to continue their ministry of preaching the word, which spread throughout the city. The church grew rapidly, and new support processes in place and the increased awareness of others would have supported that. Even the priests, those with the responsibility for leading the people in worship under the Jewish system, came to realise the significance of the person, the work, life, death, resurrection of Jesus. They responded to him, became part of the believing community. The problem had been addressed. Tensions had been resolved. The church could move forward. Great things continued to happen. I think there are important lessons in this for us today. It reminds us that there may be things we are doing, systems that we have in place that are just not working for some. And there are many ways in which this can happen. It might be that different ethnic groups feel that their preferred ways of worshipping God are being ignored. It might be that some people are not included for whatever reason in the different ways we try to communicate. It might be that some people feel they're excluded from things that they should be part of. It might be that some people are struggling with long-term illness or conditions that make it impossible for them to engage in the way that they would like to. And this weekend, we particularly think of those suffering from ME or chronic fatigue syndrome. An obvious example that we've seen over the last months and year is those who are unable to engage with the different pieces of technology that we're using. Or it might be something else. If any of these things are happening here, I hope it is unintentional and due to a lack of understanding that there is a problem. Over the last year or so, we have become aware of some such issues and have tried to address them. But there may be others we are not aware of. And I would hope that if anyone feels they are excluded in any way, they will be able to raise that issue so it can be understood and hopefully addressed. Some things might be easy to resolve, some might take more time and effort, but the first step is recognising the issue and committing to do something about it. Friends, if there are unresolved issues and tensions, it will hinder us from being what God is calling us to be. It will hinder us from what God is calling us to do. It will reduce our level of unity. It will impact the blessing we can be to our town. So let's be aware of what is going on. Let's be prepared to examine the way we do things. Let's be prepared to listen when people express concerns. Let's be gracious when raising them. And let's work together in an even deeper way than all the wonderful ways we've managed to do that so far, so that the word of God can spread, so that the number of disciples in our town increases rapidly, and so that many who seem far away from Jesus, from far away from faith, become obedient to him and follow him for themselves. Here are some questions to think about. How do you think this problem in the early church arose, and how can similar problems arise today? What do you think of the approach taken to resolving the problem? Could it have been improved? How can we ensure there are no similar issues or tensions among us that would impact the work God has called us to?